since so many of you complain about us not talking about the South enough, and I've said in the past also that one reason we don't do that is that we are diffident. I am diffident because I don't understand the politics of the South sufficiently. Also because living in Delhi, you get Delhi-centric, which is natural, unfortunately. Also, you get too focused on the Hindi heartland politics because that seems to determine first who will rule the country. That is the reason in yesterday's episode of Cut the Clutter, we ventured out and looked at Tamil Nadu. Today, we are looking at Kerala. And when we look at Kerala, we figure that this state, the most distant state from Delhi, also a state where the top two parties in the country are usually not in contest. They've never been in contest. Congress and the BJP have never been in contest. And that's probably also a reason why we haven't focused so much on Kerala in the past. However, having looked at Tamil Nadu yesterday, and I see from responses that many of you liked what we said. Everybody doesn't have to agree with all analysis, and everybody has the voting right and political views. That is different. But I do understand that you appreciated the fact that we delved deeper into the politics of Tamil Nadu, particularly in the way the BJP and Narendra Modi are coming at it. That is also the approach we are taking to Kerala today. Kerala's politics has been a little bit simple compared to some of the other states, say compared to Bihar or UP, which have had many parties come, many parties go, vote bases have shifted. In Kerala, it's been the left on one side, Congress on the other. Each side has built a coalition around it. So the left has built LDF, the Congress has built UDF. LDF, obviously, Left Democratic Front. UDF, United Democratic Front. Now, the left has like-minded parties. CPM is the nucleus, or CPM is the core, and then other like-minded parties around it, left parties. The UDF, Congress is the core, other some parties around it, but the most important thing that the Congress alliance has is the parties representing the Muslim and the Christian vote. Now, this is a very unusual situation because it's Kerala, so it has to be unique, right? In many of the other states, you would imagine generally that the default home for the minorities would be the left parties, as used to be the case, say, in West Bengal for a long time. But in Kerala, the default home of the minorities is the Congress Party, in alliance with the Congress Party. So Indian Union Muslim League, IUML, is a member of UDF, and also factions of the Christian parties, and also the Christian church leaders, they are aligned with the Congress Party. That's why Muslims and the Christians generally are known to vote for the Congress Party. What is the BJP after? What is the BJP after is they know that they cannot get the Muslims to start voting for them. It's tough for them to break away too many left voters right now. Also, the BJP is quite willing to work step by step. The highest vote percentage the BJP has got in alliance with some really chota parties in Kerala was 16% in the assembly elections of 2016. It's my view, it's also Yogendra Yadav's view, that once a party crosses 15% in a state, the party becomes a serious contender going ahead. The party can grow from there. Similarly, he's maintained that once a party, it might have been a leading party in a state, but once its vote percentage falls below 15%, it's almost impossible for it to lift itself and recover. That said, look at the situation in Kerala. In Kerala, if we look at the demographics today, Hindu population is 54.73%, let's say 55%. Muslim population at this point is 26.56%, let's say 27%. So 55% Hindus, 27% Muslims. How many are Christians? Christians are just over 18%, 18.4%. Now, Muslims will not shift from UDF. But if Christians shift from UDF, if Christians can go away from the Congress Party or the Congress-led alliance, if they can come to the BJP, that's ideal for the BJP, because then BJP begins to grow its voting percentage, and at the same time, UDF weakens. Now, UDF at this point for the BJP is an even bigger priority then vacuum cleaning the Christian votes to its own side. Suppose some of these Christian votes shifts from UDF to LDF. That is the adversary of the BJP, obviously, because LDF is also the ruling party. In fact, this is the only state in the country which the left rules right now. BJP's big ideological adversary. But enemy's enemy is your friend, in the sense that if some of this Christian vote moves from the UDF to LDF, LDF may become stronger, but UDF will become weaker. So for the BJP, this will become a situation similar to what they are aiming at in Tamil Nadu, which is let ADMK weaken and they keep moving into ADMK space. So in the course of time, they become the number two political force in Tamil Nadu and the main challenger to DMK in place of the ADMK. In Kerala also, they know they can't suddenly come to power in Kerala. It has to go step by step. So the next step for them would be to somehow replace UDF as the second party or the second coalition, if they build a coalition around themselves, as the second group in Kerala, so as the main challengers of LDF. Either way, in that pursuit, the shifting of Christian vote from UDF is critical. Now, that is where we locate the current controversy over Doordarshan's screening of the Kerala story, the film. The Kerala story, as we all know, it's the story about some Hindu girls who quote unquote or allegedly get lured into marriage by Muslim boys and converted to Islam, and then they are taken out and they are made to join ISIS and carry out operations for them in some cases, and then they get caught in Afghanistan and their lives get ruined. Now, this was a divisive film. This was a divisive film. This was also a political film. It was a political film also to the extent that the BJP backed this film and BJP promoted this film. In fact, speaking in Ballari in Karnataka, the Prime Minister himself spoke about the film in an election rally, and he said, "This shows how terrorists operate and the design of terrorists, who the Congress party," he said, "has been hand in glove with." So once again, I only say this to underline the fact that this is a political film with a political message. That is the reason it also got telecast on DD this time. As it got telecast on DD, there was an immediate reaction in Kerala, because this pertains to supposedly Kerala, women from Kerala. This is a Kerala phenomenon. That's why the name, the Kerala story. So Pinarayi Vijayan, the chief minister, immediately took to Twitter, I still don't call it X, and said that this film incites polarization, is highly condemnable, etc. Democratic Youth Federation of India, which is the wing of the CPM, they carried out a protest at Doordarshan Kendra in Thiruvananthapuram. UDF also, that is the Congress-led coalition also, they also spoke against the telecast of this film and also wrote a letter to the Election Commission. April 7, however, something very interesting happened. April 7, the Idukki Diocese of
Chiro Malabar Church.
Now, don't ask me to explain the church politics in Kerala right now. It is at this point out of my syllabus. It's very complicated. And soon enough, Anand Kochukudi, our contributor from Kerala, on whose knowledge I am relying a great deal to do this episode of Karta Clutter also, he'll write a piece for you explaining the internal politics of the church in Kerala. So the Idukki Diocese of the
Chiro Malabar Church,
they decided to screen the Kerala story for about 100 students of, say, class 11, 12. These are students of catechism. Catechism is a Christian idea of the teaching of principles of Christian religion in questions and answers. So you watch this film and you can ask questions and answers are given. And the church also said that they also distributed to the students who came there booklets on love. This was done by Father Jens Karakat, who is the chairman of the Idukki Diocese Media Committee. After this, there was an immediate buzz in the church, because large sections of the church saw this as the BJP infiltrating Christian politics. They didn't quite say so, but that's what they meant. So in response, on April 10, the Archdiocese of Ernakulam Angamali near Kochi, at the end of the classes of a teaching course for young students on Christianity, they screened a 15-minute documentary called Cry of the Oppressed. This is a documentary to what happened in Manipur. This is a documentary about the burning of churches because a lot of the excesses have also been victims in a lot of the excesses have also been tribals who happen to be almost all Christian. So this was a kind of counter to the Kerala story. This was led by Father James Panavelil. And what did Father James Panavelil say? He said, and I quote him, "I was of the view that such a propaganda film should not be in a children's class. That is the Kerala story, should not be in a children's class. If we do so, we will also become a part of propaganda. We should stay away from that controversy. Manipur, however, is a reality." This is a fact, not a fallacy. And that's the reason he showed the Manipur film. This, he said, was to counter the BJP propaganda. Now, there's a little bit of a background to this. In September 2021, in fact, on 10th September 2021, this is around time UP was talking about and other states were talking about their love jihad laws. This is when the prominent Kerala priest, Bishop Mar Joseph Kalarangat of Palai Diocese of the
Siro Malabar Church.
Again, he talked about love jihad and narcotics jihad. And he said it's one of the biggest threats to us. He said, speaking at the Marth Mariam Pilgrim Church, that these are weapons, that narcotics jihad and love jihad are weapons to spoil non-Muslims. And he said, and I quote again from him, "In a democratic country like ours, jihadis have realized that they cannot destroy other communities by using arms. The jihadis are using other weapons which cannot be identified easily by others. In the perspective of jihadis," he goes on to say, and I'm quoting him, "in the perspective of jihadis, all non-Muslims have to be annihilated where the agenda is spreading religion and eradication of non-Muslims. The ways for attaining that agenda get manifested in different manners. Love jihad and narcotic jihad are two such ways." So what is narcotic jihad? That's an idea that you get people from other communities who go to clubs, who go to even milk bars, who go to parties, who go to discos, and send them cheap narcotics to allegedly weaken those communities. So if anything, narcotics jihad is another leap of faith that goes way beyond the idea of love jihad as well, which means if you can't conquer them through quote unquote love, you can destroy them through narcotics. This conservative Christian concern about the spread of Islam is not that new. It's been expressed several times in the past also. It came up when the Congress was in power, when Uman Chandy was chief minister. That's when the Global Council of Indian Christians, they raised this issue and they said that Muslims are adopting other methods to grow, to make their numbers grow and to bring down and to target the Christian numbers. This happened when a Christian woman who had converted to Islam had joined Lashkar-e-Toyba and was caught for allegedly supplying SIM cards to Lashkar-e-Toyba operatives. This is a time when the Global Council of Indian Christians made these allegations and they said that between 2006 and 2012, 447 Christian women had been converted forcibly or through allurement or were tricked into conversion through marriage, through love and marriage, into Islam. Uman Chandy, then the Congress chief minister or the UDF chief minister, speaking in the assembly, said that yes, between 2006 and 12, 2,667 women of other faiths had converted to Islam, but there was nothing malevolent about it. This was a matter of natural choice. They just chose to get married and convert to Islam. At the same time, not everybody was convinced. V.S. Achyutananda, no less. He was the great patriarch of the left, the Stalinist of Stalinists. See that picture of mine with him also on one of my election trips in Kerala. V.S. Achyutanandan, former chief minister, he said that Muslims are converting women from other religions and in this process, they are using money and guns. This was also an issue that was picked up by the Kerala Catholic Bishops' Council. So this goes back that long. Now, why is the left also getting involved in this? Once again, it's all about votes. You remember that famous immortal promo on NDTV that featured Lalu Yadav, who said, बहुत पॉलिटिक्स है. सो एवरीवेयर बहुत पॉलिटिक्स है, इट्स ए लॉट ऑफ पॉलिटिक्स. सो फॉर द लेफ्ट ऑल्सो, इफ दे थिंक दैट द मुस्लिम वोट स्टेज विद इंडियन यूनियन मुस्लिम लीग, दे कांट हैव देम एज देयर पार्टनर्स, सो लेट देम बी पार्टनर्स विद UDF. बट इन द प्रोसेस इफ सम क्रिश्चियन वोट कैन गेट फेड अप and move to them, and that can only happen if Christians get suspicious of Muslims. So to that extent, both the left and the BJP have a common vested interest. How that works, I will share with you a story that Fatima Khan, one of our reporters, had done for us from Kerala some time back. You will find a link to that story with the description of this video. Now, the key to all this lies in Kerala's demography. So, see the chart and understand the demography. In Kerala, as I told you, the population is divided. So, about say 50-55% Hindu right now. Now, it's being extrapolated on the 2011 census. So say about 55% Hindus, 18%, 18.5% Christians, and about 26-27% Muslims. In this situation, insecurities can rise quickly, particularly among the community that's not growing. Now, the BJP will say the Hindus are not growing. So, if you see this chart in 1901, because we are going census by census, there was a census every year, except unfortunately in 2021 recently, and also 1941 during the Second World War. So, 1901, the percentage of Hindus in Kerala was 68.5%. 1961, that is 60 years later, it came down to 60.9%. 2011, another 50 years later, it came down to about 55%. Now it might be 54.5%, we don't know. When the next census comes, we'll know, but this gives us an idea. So once again, the BJP will say, see, look at how the percentage of Hindus is declining. If the percentage of Hindus is declining, somebody's percentage should be increasing. Before we go to the Muslims in that case, because that's where there is an increase in percentage population, we look at Christians. Christians were 13.9% in 1901 census. 60 years later in 1961, they came to 21.2%. That was the peak of the Christian population. In 2011, they came down to 18.4%, and estimates are that today they'll be a little bit less than that. So what happens now with insecurities? One, the BJP will work on the Hindu mind, saying that, look, your numbers are coming down, Muslims are going up, because Muslim percentage has gone up. 1901, it was 17.5%. 60 years later, 1961, 17.9%. So about the same. Also, because I'm sure a bunch of Muslims would have migrated to Pakistan. 2011 census, it was 26.6% already. And now the estimates are that it might be close to 28%. Now, this worries the smaller minority more. So there are many people in the Christian community, particularly in the Christian clergy, who are saying we are getting really outnumbered. We are getting outnumbered because our people are not producing enough babies. We are getting outnumbered because of conversions. We are also becoming outnumbered because Malayali Christians who go overseas to work often go to countries where immigration is possible. Whereas the Muslim Malayalis mostly go to the Gulf countries where immigration is not possible. So they keep coming back and they continue to be Indian citizens. So that is again a source of insecurity which the BJP is trying to cash in on. And in the course of time, given an opportunity, particularly if they see the Christians leaving the Congress party or getting disillusioned with UDF because of the Muslim overhang there, it's possible that the left would also see a chance of attracting some of this vote to their side. That will suit the BJP fine, because even if the Christian vote shifts from UDF not to the BJP but to the left, it weakens the UDF. As UDF weakens, it increases, it improves the BJP's prospects of becoming the second party, or at least a close third party in Kerala in the next step. That is what the game is all about right now. Now, as we had told you about Tamil Nadu, Prime Minister Modi has already done 7 visits. In fact, he has 4 days of continuous travel in Tamil Nadu. Similarly, in Kerala, again a state where the BJP counts for almost nothing, he has made 4 visits already, and the 5th visit is now underway. Now, once again, he's trying to establish the party there. As I said, the longer term vision is to at least become the number 2 party, maybe become a 3rd party right now, and then a number 2 party if UDF declines, and later see if they can again get the Hindu vote to move towards them, this smattering of Christians as well. So that operation is on. However, Anand Kochugudi tells me that there are 3 seats in which the BJP has serious presence or serious prospects. One is Thiruvananthapuram, where Shashi Tharoor is now facing a challenge from Minister Rajiv Chandrasekhar. Second is Pathanamthitta, where the BJP has fielded Anil Antony. That is the son of the old Congress stalwart, A.K. Antony. A.K. Antony, however, has given interviews to Asianet and also to Anand Kochukudi, saying that he doesn't agree with the idea of Anil Antony joining the BJP. He hasn't been speaking with him. And if health permits, he will even campaign against him. So Anil Antony is the BJP's candidate in Pathanamthitta. And Thrissur is again a constituency where Anand tells me BJP would have had a good chance. But they inducted Padmaja Venugopal, the daughter of former Congress Chief Minister and stalwart K. Karunakaran, into their party just a couple of days before the filing of the nominations in the constituency. And the Congress party was fleet-footed enough at that point to get her brother, K. Muralidharan, to become their candidate in Thrissur. That has strengthened the Congress party's prospects there. In any case, whatever prospects the BJP has, Thiruvananthapuram, Pathanamthitta and Thrissur are the three constituencies. Now, before I let you go, just to understand how has the BJP doing in Kerala. BJP has never really established a presence. They had one seat, which also they lost in the last assembly elections in 2021. The highest vote percentage the BJP got with an ally or two, Chota ally or two, was 16% in the 2016 assembly elections. 2019 Lok Sabha elections, they got 15%, but they were also riding sub-sentiment on the Sabarimala controversy. 2021 assembly elections, however, the BJP declined. They declined to about 11% of their own. With their partner, they were about 12.5%. The partner in this case was BDKS, which is Bharat Dharma Janasena. Bharat Dharma Janasena, which is led by an Ezawa leader, Ezawa community leader, Tushar Velapalli, whose party is now contesting in 4 seats in alliance with the BJP. So for the BJP, once again, this Kerala move is an effort to climb a few more steps on the ladder. And that's where this Muslim-Christian politics becomes so critical. That's why Kerala story has now been telecast. That's the reason one faction of the Christian clergy has welcomed it and also shown this film to their own students, while the other section, the much more dominant section of the Christian clergy, has countered it by showing the 15-minute documentary on Manipur, which portrays excesses on Christian population and burning of churches, etc. In conclusion, therefore, some kind of a multi-party, multi-faith crusade for the vote banks is really on in earnest in Kerala.